Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. PNWA hosts the Pacific Northwest Writers Association Writers Conference, the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference, every year. And they'll be doing it again this year in the summer. Now, this year, I'm going to be one of four people teaching master classes. Robert Degoni, the best-selling suspense writer, Robert Degoni, will be teaching a class, as will Bob Mayer. I think Bob's going to be teaching a master class on marketing, and I will be teaching master class on memoir, one of my favorite subjects. And also, Donald Moss, the great Donald Moss, will be there for a special one-day event at the end on Sunday. So it's going to be a great conference. So if you want to sign up for the conference and try to get into one of those master classes, do so now. I know they're starting to fill up already. Yes, it's true. And the conference is this summer. So go to pnwa.org and sign up now. All right. Well, I'm very happy today. I get to welcome back a friend and a previous guest of the show, the wonderful Philip Donnelly. Philip is he's an interesting guy. He combines, and he does something I highly recommend. He takes the things he loves and he puts them together in a fascinating stew of a career. He's been a flight instructor, has Philip. He's also flown a private jet for a Saudi prince. He flew for 28 years, flew a corporate jet for Fortune 500 companies. Oh, he's logged 14,000 hours in the air and he writes books. He's the author of now six wonderful suspense novels. Pegasus Down is his latest, mixing the world of international suspense with flying, which is suspenseful enough all on its own. He's going to talk to us today about these two worlds. Philip, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here, Bill. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. All right. So today we drop book number six, Pegasus Down. How does it feel? The new daddy.
Well,
how do you feel?
Yeah, you know, and that's a lot like that. It never gets old.
No.
You know, there's a lot of anticipation. There's a lot of pacing. There's a lot of late nights, you know, before we get to this point. And so it feels great. You know, I woke up and there was a lot of great reviews and people saying nice things. And some of the readers have already kind of weighed in that those that read fast. So
yes,
have already weighed in with thumbs up. So it's a good day.
Excellent. And so you read reviews. You let yourself read reviews.
I do. I have to read them. And then I have a rule, though. If I get a bad one, it only ruins that day. It can't bleed over into the next day.
Is that true? How do you
exert
control? How do you put these parameters on the suffering? You just say that's it. The next day you wake up and say, I'm not going to think about it anymore.
Well, I think, you know, there might be some adult beverages in the middle of that process, but yeah, it's just that one day.
Oh man, you know, though, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. It's so hard with reviews. You read them and you go, oh, I feel so good. This person liked it. Then you kind of have to feel bad when the next one doesn't, don't you? I mean,
well,
if you're
going to
feel
sword,
good because of one.
Right. And then, though, I think I was so perplexed because this happened a while back. There was a gentleman posted a review on Amazon and he raved about it. But somehow through an errant mouse click, he only gave me a one-star review.
Oh, no.
So it's like, one star, and I'm like, holy mackerel. And I read it, and it was awesome. So I didn't know what to do with that one.
Oh, that's so fascinating. Well, such is the world of the internet. It's a strange time when anyone with a connection to the internet can become a book reviewer and can conceivably make or break a writer's day, where once upon a time it was just a small collection of major newspaper reviewers that could do that.
Right, right. No, it is. The thing we have now, though, is hopefully we have some volume, you know, and you can kind of like the old Olympic Games, we can throw out the high and the low and ignore the East German judge and move on.
But here's my question to you is that, okay, so you've written Pegasus Down. I assume you finished it about at least 6 months ago. I mean, you were probably done with it at least 6 months ago.
My publisher likes a 14-month lead, so it's been done for a year.
Wow. Okay, so you finished a year ago, and I'm sure you're working, if you haven't already finished, on book number 7, yeah?
Yeah, it's finished, and
okay.
Starting to think about book 8, yeah.
All right, so that's the way the author works. I know that as soon as you're done with anything, I write very short pieces mostly, in addition to book length things, but I write short pieces every day, and I finish them, and then it's on to the next thing, and I've already forgotten. In fact, a piece just popped up on Huffington Post that I published, and I couldn't even remember, and I finished it 4 days ago, and I've already forgotten what it's about. So I'm going to have to go back and reread it. So this is the way the creative process works. Well, and so my question is, I just pulled my earplug out of my ear. Back in it goes. I gesticulate even alone. My question to you is this. What can you do with those reviews? Because you're already you're practically two books away from that thing. Can you work with any of that feedback? Can it really affect what you're doing now?
I don't think, it depends on the review. The good ones, hooray, and the bad ones, you just deal with that. But I think what you learn to do, or what I've tried to do, is the bad one can bum me out, but then, it doesn't change what I do. And the
right.
good reviews outweigh the bad reviews, which is fortunate.
Well,
but,
that's nice.
So, I don't really let, and sometimes it's just, there's just a nebulous word or two in there that bums me out. And,
give me an example. Like what? Give me.
Well, there's let's say Publishers Weekly.
Okay.
They gave me a fairly good review, but in the first sentence it said something to the effect of, Philip Donnelly's uneven Pegasus Down.
God, that word.
and then they proceeded to say some nice things, and I'm like,
right.
I'm like, wow, what does that mean? And
right.
And there's no way to address that, and they're the only one, really. I mean, the rest of book list, Killer Nashville, lots of people have given me great reviews for this book. Except for the uneven word.
I
don't know what you
from
do
that,
with that
one.
Yeah.
But important to remember about that, and I'm speaking to you and to all our listeners, many of whom write and have their books reviewed, is that so that was a Publisher's Weekly review?
Yeah.
You said? So okay, yeah. So it comes from Publisher's Weekly, right? But the truth is it's not Publisher's Weekly who did it, it's one person writing for pub, so really it has the auspices of this whole organization, as if they'd all gathered together and decided collectively that Philip Donnelly's book is uneven. But no, it was one person hired to write a review of that one book, and that was their opinion. That one word was one
right.
choice that they chose because that was their experience of it.
Right. And so
that'll follow you through your day.
Well, I don't let that, because as the author,
good.
As the creator, and that's gone through this process, through the publisher, through the proofreader, through the editors, I guarantee you it's not uneven. So there.
Good for you. Good for you. Now, let's see. So about a year ago, you published an essay in Author about writing a book, and was it writing Pegasus Down, or was it
that was Aftershock.
Aftershock. Okay. Experience of writing Aftershock, which was your last book.
Right.
And during which you sort of sequestered yourself away in a cabin somewhere to try and get this thing written, and it was quite an experience for you. And so how did the writing
I don't hear you.
All right. Phil, how are you doing?
I think Publishers Weekly has a stronger reach than we thought.
Oh, my God. They were going to shut this place down. Well,
yeah,
everybody,
that's it.
Were you able to hear me when I tried when you came back on?
No,
I couldn't hear you.
Anything. No, my phone said it was we were connected, but there was nothing going
on. Oh, brother. Well, anyway, to my listeners, my power went out. And then it came back on again, but not until the whole show had been shut down. So anyway, I'm back and I'm on the phone. Philip, all right, listen, let us not let this distract us. Let us continue. So Pegasus Down, did this come easier to you than Aftershock?
Well, I use the same process. I do like the whole full immersion writing experience. So I do go to Montana and I do stay in a cabin and it's and I just do battle 24/7 with this thing, and at the end of it, at some point, there's a rough draft, and so Aftershock actually was a lot easier than some. I had some questions when I was writing it. The story kind of demanded me to do some things I wasn't sure about, and then and the article I wrote for the magazine, and we talked about that, is is you have to do what the story needs what it wants and whether it's easy or not. So when I started Pegasus Down, I about 2 weeks before I'd gotten to Montana, about 2 weeks before I was supposed to go to the cabin, I shattered my knee.
Oof.
And I had all this cartilage floating around in there, and it's hurt. I'm in a lot of pain, and I'm on crutches, and my whole summer is just is not starting well. So I have to have surgery. So it was just the summer of interruptions.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get the full immersion thing because I was always stopping to ice my leg, and then I had to go to physical therapy. And so it was a completely fragmented experience from what I usually like to do. And but it did get done, and I finished it, you know, 3 or 4 months later. And so it was a different process, but they kind of all are. They kind of all are children, and they all require different efforts to bring them to the finish line. But I did like this book because when I was flying full time, used to travel to Europe all the time, and I used to sit in a hotel room in Budapest and look out at the Danube, and it's just a gorgeous place. And I used to think, you know, someday I'm going to figure out a book that can happen right here.
Yeah.
So I was very pleased that this was the book that I got to do that.
That's great.
So yeah, you know, they all take place differently. You know, I set out with my structure and my my rules, and they're gone. You know, they just go, and you gotta dial, and you gotta just go with it. But you can't quit, and that's the main thing. You should just keep. And I do. I write the whole thing. I don't read the first chapter or the first paragraph until I get done.
Oh, really? So you don't, because when I'm writing a book-length thing, I'll begin my day by reading what I wrote the day before to sort of get me in the groove, but you don't even do that. You just go.
Nope. I quit. Ooh. You know, I do the thing where, you know, I'll quit in the middle of a sentence, or, you know, I'll quit when I know exactly what the next word is going to be.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That keeps you in the flow for the next day. Yeah, one of the things I tell my students, and a lot of whom are trying to write their first book or have never attempted something of a book-length project, is I say, get yourself a schedule, because books, I mean, not all of them can do the full immersion that you do, but certainly if you're doing an hour or two a day, there is something where the book keeps living in you in between writing sessions. But if you go too long, it can't happen. If it's a week in between, but if it's just, you know, 24 hours or whatever, the thing is still sort of percolating in there, I find.
Well, the thing that I like is you just keep it on the back burner. You keep something going all the time.
Absolutely.
Even with the summer of interruptions, you know, it still stayed, you know, pretty fresh. I'd hobble out to the river and fly fish, and, you know, but stuff's still percolating in there, and I have discovered a lot of solutions and a lot of plot problems out while I'm not catching fish.
I have made a new rule for myself, Phil, and this sounds like just what you were referring to. Is I used to look upon my work time as when I was sitting at the desk. You know, I write, but I do other things at the desk, but mostly I write. But then I realized so much gets done when I'm vacuuming or when I'm just walking around, and some of my best ideas happen then. And I thought it really is a misnomer to say I'm working now, but I'm not working at this other time just because I'm drifting around, because the imagination doesn't know what I'm doing. It just keeps going regardless. You know what I mean?
No, and I find if you get out of your own way sometimes, your subconscious will tell you what you need to do.
Absolutely.
And if your conscious brain is clogging up the process, then you go occupy it doing something else, and the subconscious will get through.
I have decided at the ripe old age of 50 that the only thing that has ever come between me and all those things that I want in my life is me, that I'm always the uncooperative component in whatever it is I'm trying to do, that it's always that when I let the thing happen, it's just what you describe it, whether it's a story or it's some larger career goal, it's me getting out of the way and letting it happen as opposed to trying to sort of manhandle it.
Exactly. Well, that's, and I saw that in flying. You can try to force things, and I promise you, every pilot out there has got, you know, off the chart control needs, but that's not always required. It's not always required outside of airplanes sometimes. So, you sit back and you just, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'll let Lauren, my female protagonist, I'll let her tell me what she wants to do. I'm here. Yeah. I'm going to go fishing. She can tell me later.
Let me ask you this. So I love it when authors tell me that, and it's so, I think that for where I don't write fiction at this time anymore. I write nonfiction and memoir and stuff, but it's really the same process. But one of the first place most writers become acquainted with the sort of listening aspect of writing, which is how I always think of it, is when characters, quote, tell them what to do, just like you described then. And this is often where writers first discover the power of what the subconscious. But for writers, someone who isn't a fiction writer, describe what that means. Because from the outside, it looks like, well, what do you mean your character told you what? It's only you're sitting there. Their character isn't there. How does she tell you what to do? Describe what that's like.
Well, I was once a rookie. I didn't know what I was doing. And I would get lost. And, you know, and I tried to outline my way out of it. And that's one way to do it. You know, if you just, you have your character and there's a crossroad, you can sit down on a separate piece of paper or a whiteboard or whatever, and play What If until you get to the end, and you can
right.
And that's just a trial and error way, and that's not a bad way to do it. A little time consuming, I think, at first, but it'll work, and then you intertwine the other characters with it, end up with the finish line. Which is why I tell everyone that asks me how to write a novel that you got to know where you're going. I mean, you got to know where you're going to end up. I don't care what route you take, but you got to know where the finish line is. It's imperative you know the ending. So you can meander a little bit in the between here and there, but everyone needs to get at the finish line, you know, about the same time. And
right.
So to get to listen to that, you know, you have to know your characters. I don't think that starts right away. I have to say, I was well into my probably third book in the series that before I started to kind of, it's like when you meet a person, you know, I can't finish their sentence right away, but after I know them a while, several years, then I do know them. And I think that's when that process starts. Because it is a relationship and
it is, it's a relationship.
And then they do talk.
Right. They do. And once you start listening, they will talk.
Yes. Yes. And you have to trust them. You have to be,
yes, you do.
Have to be listening for their voice.
Hold on just a second. I'm going to mute. Okay.
All right. Sorry. Technical difficulties, but that's ended now. So, and so your characters are talking to you, and how did the book you just finished go? Did you learn something new writing that?
Oh yeah. If you haven't learned something, you didn't do it right.
That's right. Correct, sir.
I started as usual. I figured out my book, what I was going to write for the summer, because with my publishing schedule, my release date in March that I like, summer is my time to write a new book. So June rolled around and I was in place and ready for the full immersion experience. I'd done all the research. I sat down. I started writing. It was going wonderfully. And then I got to a point about 100 pages in, and I thought, you know, this is not the right book. This is a good book. I like it. It will be written down the road, but this is not the right book for number 7.
Hmm.
So that caused me some sleepless nights.
Yeah.
Because now I'm hopelessly behind if I switch gears, and then if I change the book, I didn't want to do that. So I finally made it. I just made the decision. I had to take a break, actually, and I came to the Pacific Northwest Writers Conference, which was a great experience, by the way. And from there, I headed back to Montana, and I started over. I started a brand new book.
Wow.
So it was, I'm completely out of my element now because I don't have the research. I'm doing research in the morning. I'm writing in the afternoon, and I finally decided sometimes – maybe they call them mysteries because the author doesn't know what he's doing. It's a mystery to him too.
Yeah.
So I wrote a completely new book, one I had not intended to write, and finished it within a day of my deadline, turned it over to my agent. My agent sent it to the publisher. I wasn't real sure because I didn't have that time to let it sit and sort of, you know, ferment that I like. And they liked it. In fact, I just signed a 2-book deal from that book. So,
oh, congratulations.
Thank you. So you never know what to expect, except it's never what you're going to plan. It's just, you know, it was helter-skelter there for a while, that's for sure.
Wow. Well, I think I asked you this question once before, but before I let you go, I want to ask it again. Because, you know what, answers change with this, and that's what's so fascinating about this question, which is finish the sentence. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
I think how to listen to people.
Oh, even people that are not living in your imagination?
Yes. Yes. maybe writing teaches me to be a better person. I don't know. I'd have to think about that. I don't even know what was my answer last year. Do you have that?
I don't remember. I can ask that question again. It taught you to listen to people. That's awesome. How did it do that?
Well, because, you know, when I write, my characters, and I put a lot of thought into that. And there's, you know, there's nuance, and there's inflection, and there's a lot of nonverbal stuff going on, and it's the same in real life. And so if you're just listening to somebody's voice and not looking at their eyes or their gestures, then you're missing some stuff. So I think that's what I've learned.
That's excellent. Well, Philip, thank you for bearing with our many technical difficulties here. I'm so glad we got you back on the show and that we were able to fly this bird all the way to the end without crashing too many times. The book is out today. It's Pegasus Down. Where all fine books are sold, yes?
Yes, yes. And
absolutely.
And the way I understand it, Pegasus Down in the ebook platform is just a limited time, 99 cents.
Go! Get it now!
I know.
Get it while you can.
It's a bargain.
Wow.
Exactly.
Well, Philip, good luck with this, and maybe I'll get to chat with you next year.
Well, I look forward to it. Thanks so much.
All right, take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you, my listeners, for those of you who stuck with me through such troubling times. As I mentioned, our power went out, but it's back on, and so am I. I will be back again same time next week, talking to the enigmatic Matt Ruth, the novelist. Until then, go take what you love and throw it into a story.